interrupt your program to bring you this important podcast. How to 911.
Can you put me out of service on a podcast, please?
Welcome back, guys, to How to 911. I'm Sammy.
I'm Erica.
And we have a special guest who is this our first return officer?
Yes.
Yeah. So we've already had this person on the guest, on the guest list. right. For a different interview, and so now we're talking about an actual thing that correlates with both dispatch and policing. So we're going to be talking to Officer Marner. Say hello.
Hello.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, you can multitask?
I can.
Look at you. So we're going to be talking about civil issues because that's a lot of things that we take calls for. And most of the time, if we catch it, we can advise you that it's civil in matter. But we don't really know the logistics about it. Like, I just know custody issues are civil.
Borrowing cars.
Civil. Like, things are civil. I don't know why. So that's why we have Officer Marner here. So let's talk about our first question. What constitutes as being a civil versus criminal situation?
I think the easiest way to distinguish between the two is civil law protects citizens as individuals. So protecting them against violations of their human rights. Mm-hmm. Criminal law protects and serves as a violation of societal law. So there's potential crossover between the two, I guess, is an easy way to say. There could be punishments for civil violations. And you need the burden of proof, obviously, for criminal. You don't need that for civil. Mm-hmm. Couple of minor terms. I have a couple things pulled up for that. So the criminal version of theft, right, is diversion is civil. I don't know anything about diversion, but similarly, it's like theft. Just I don't know necessarily when that would come into contact. It just was an example. In civil matters, typically officers maintain the status quo. Don't take any action unless one of the parties violated criminal law during the situation. Mm-hmm. So we do a lot of kind of like civil standbys. I know that term's probably thrown around a lot. I don't know if you guys have an understanding of that necessarily, or maybe you know what it is or what the services we provide, but not necessarily why we do it. Mm-hmm. We do a civil standby. We're not there on anyone's behalf. We're there basically on both parties' behalfs or none of the parties' behalf, were there just to keep the peace. So a lot of times you'll have a domestic violence arrest, and they'll be authorized a one-time civil standby. So we'll go with that person to their house to get their some immediate property. They have 20 minutes to retrieve that. And so it's like clothes, toiletries, undergarments, medication, stuff like that that you would need immediately. Mm-hmm. We're not there to get large pieces of furniture or something. Anything that's in dispute gets left there. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Other civil things are like contractual agreements, verbal or written. Obviously, it's pretty hard to prove a verbal agreement, but it's hard to disprove one as well. So there's just no way to know which side is telling the truth. So we just try not to get involved and help mediate the bigger, conflict overall best we can to keep the peace. Most of the time when a civil matter comes into play, we advise people to contact an attorney. Mm-hmm. Whereas when it's criminal, obviously you're contacting us is the first step. So kind of a little specific brief overview there, I guess.
So what can the police department do for civil issues?
Kind of as I just outlined, we don't give legal advice, but I would say if you have a concern of this, you can contact an attorney. Mm-hmm. Also, a lot of people, I had a call today actually where somebody was asking about defamation of character that you could maybe bring up to an attorney or a lawsuit and potentially go after them for damaging your reputation, whereas the First Amendment covers that as far as criminally is concerned up until a point. That's kind of... The approach we take, or we do a civil standby. If there's anything with like an eviction, for example, right, that's a contractual obligation or agreement. They're not fulfilling that, but it doesn't arise to the level of criminal law violation, so we're not going to go and kick those people out. The county does that and has a whole civil process and unit that handles that, so they're the ones that handle that.
So, speaking of eviction, what are they? Like a little bit more in depth, and why don't we do them?
I think the basis of an eviction is like you haven't paid your rent, or you've broken some sort of contractual obligation on your lease. So whether it's damage or, you know, we find this a lot with like Section 8 or lower income housing people. They're bringing people over to stay or live for extended periods of time that aren't on the lease. So that might be something that is addressed by their landlord or the management company that they want that person kicked out of that location for. We don't do that, again, because doesn't arise to criminal law. Like them not paying the rent, is that wrong? Morally, yes. Mm-hmm. But as far as criminally meeting the guidelines of chargeable offenses, it doesn't. And there's a distinction. And I understand that it varies, obviously, from state to state, but it can vary from county to county and city to city. So I can't speak for everywhere, but
right.
Our county and this city, which I've primarily worked in, that's how they choose to handle it. And I, for a actual explanation, I would imagine that the sheriff's office as an entity or a whole has adopted the, from what some way the law was written previously, as the role to handle the eviction process, and they have a civil unit that handles that. I think they focus mostly on evictions and those processes, but I would imagine they could do some other stuff. Now, a caveat to that for us along the civil standby I mentioned, we'll allow 20 minutes, and that's just because of staffing, right? I mean, you can't have, if we have five officers working day shift like today, you can't have an officer tied up for 2 hours while somebody's getting all their stuff out. But we offer through, calling up here to make an appointment, you can hire an officer off duty at their hourly rate to provide that standby to get a larger amount of property out. But again, that would be anything that's not in dispute. So anything in dispute has to be settled by mediator or the courts, by a judge, attorney, stuff like that.
So if somebody say it's like getting property and then the other person is like, no, that's mine, you can't take it, you're basically like, well, it stays here.
100%.
Gotcha.
Yep. Because we don't know.
Yeah, right.
I mean, in most of those cases, they're married, so it's 50-50 ownership at that point. So how can I say who utilizes the TV more?
Yeah.
The guy or the girl or the suspect or the victim. So the courts are the ones that have to go in and go through that with a fine tooth comb. A lot of times I think people get that done through a mediator and don't hire attorneys. And it doesn't usually see a judge, but
right.
There are those instances where people can't get along and has to go to the full maximum route, I guess.
Right. So then custody agreements. Are the custody papers, what is it called?
Mm-hmm. Same.
That is civil. Why, so a violation of a custody agreement, we typically don't send officers on that. Can you explain as to why? Because some people see that as being criminal because they're taking the child or like kidnapping the child.
Yeah, so I think that's an easy and difficult distinction to be made, right? So technically it's not really kidnapping because legally if a dad has custody and the mom has custody, they both technically have rights to those kids. So I can't go and take the kid from dad to give to mom because dad technically has legal custody just as much as mom does. I mean, it's unfortunate, and I'm not by any means saying that children are property, but if you view it in that sense, similar to like the civil standby, like I can't determine who uses the TV more. Mm-hmm. So there's no way to determine that you're a better parent for your kid based off my 5 or 10 minute interaction with you at that time. So what we tell people is, you know, we get this call quite a bit. A mom or dad will call and say, hey, it's my weekend for the kids. Okay, well, I'm not going to go legally or illegally at that point take the child from one parent to give to another parent, because technically that are violating a writ or a agreement of court paperwork, but them spending time with their kids not a violation of law. Does that make sense?
Right.
I mean, we can kind of get, it's a lot more muddier than that, or muddy at times than that, but that's kind of just like a brief overview of why we don't get involved.
I've told people, like, if the court order is very specific on, like, this is your weekend, it's April 22nd through April 24th, can you enforce it then?
So I think for the most part you'll find officers that say no, but I know that in speaking previously to Attorney Junglis, that if we have a court paperwork or writ from our court in our city, then we can act on that. However, that's very few, because you're going to go through county court for all family disputes and stuff having to do with that. So that's going to go up to Fort Collins, to the larger district courts, than it is down here. So I think there's exceptions to that, but for the most part, we stay out of it.
Would you sometimes just, like, try to contact both parents and be like, hey, can you just bring the kid over? It's their weekend.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes we'll give that a try, but obviously if one parent's not agreeing to give the kid to the other parent, they're probably not going to be agreeable just because of the police call. And most couples in this circumstance understand that. So the advice that we, not legal advice, but the information that we give to them is, hey, you need to file a motion in court on whatever the next day available that your ex-significant other is not complying with the custody paperwork. And they usually address that in court and ends up being, potentially could be contempt of court, which then starts to get back around to the criminal side.
And is that something that would be handled through court and through Larimer County Sheriff's Office Civil Unit?
So the Larimer County Civil Unit, I don't believe enforces child custody stuff either. I believe that only goes through the courts.
Okay.
Again, that's not my, like, I'm not part of the civil process unit of the county. So we've had just a broad generalization and understanding of what to get involved in. And I guess in these circumstances, more importantly, not to get involved in. And the courts would handle that. Typically, like I said, it ends up being like a modification in court paperwork or a contempt of court because that significant other or that person is not complying with the mandated court paperwork. So I think there's circumstances where you could act, but for the most part, we don't get involved.
Gotcha. So then let's talk about serving papers. I know Larimer County talks about this a lot because they'll call over to us and say, just so you know, we've got a sheriff over here that's serving papers to this house. I think it's mainly like writs. I don't know if that's the correct term or not, but
I mean, it's any sort of documents from that civil side of things. So they're called a civil processor server. So they're going to serve like divorce paperwork, eviction paperwork, probably that kind of custody paperwork. Again, there might be some more to that. I don't know because I don't work for the civil process unit. But a lot of times, too, people are served like restraining order paperwork. So there will be a restraining order, and that's criminal. However, you know, if they don't get served at the time of court for whatever reason, you know, there will be a date on there that says date served, like DOS, I believe. And it'll say the date on which they were served. So I've had that before where you go to restraining order violation, and there's not a date served because they were never served. Mm. So they can't be violating a restraining order if they've never been served of one or told they were restrained from that property or that person. So then a couple, you know, it's only happened probably a handful of times and, you know, going on the 6 years I've been here, but then you basically serve them a copy of that restraining order, inform Larimer County through dispatch typically, hey, this is the date and time they were served. So they'll update that court paperwork or that restraining order paperwork through the courts or county, and then that will be on there from then on.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
It doesn't happen that often.
Yeah.
Most of the time. Can you remember times of that ever happening?
Mm-mm.
It's not a lot. Like I said, probably, I said a handful, but I would guess two or three times ever since I've been here. But I've talked to people. I remember having a conversation with Greg Harris about that, and he had done that before too. So not very often.
Gotcha. So speaking of restraining orders, I didn't put this in the questions, but people call all the time and they're
now
like...
Now we're going ad-lib.
I know, here. Now we're like...
Oh boy. The pressure is on. No script.
But people call all the time for the police department and they're like, yeah, I want a restraining order. And I have to tell them that's through the courts.
Right.
But then most of the time they want to talk to an officer, get advice, or like figure out how that ball gets rolling.
Okay. So where's your question?
My question is to finish my thought process for that. No, like, so what would you tell somebody who wants to get a restraining order?
That happens all the time. Most people will call in. I think I saw a call on the board today for that, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Some dispute between a husband and a wife. They got in an argument and he wanted a restraining order.
Mm-hmm.
Well, typically, I tell people you can petition the court for a restraining order anytime you want for a nominal fee. You go down to the courthouse, get the paperwork, fill it out, submit it. Last time I checked, it was roughly like $50 to $100. I can't remember to process that paperwork. Now, do I believe that the courts will file a restraining order just because one person gets mad at the other and wants one? Probably not. But I would say that, like, it doesn't hurt to try if you feel like it's necessary. Now, obviously, the court in Colorado is very specific. There should be something that should have happened that you felt the need to call the police, that the police were involved in to investigate or make an arrest if necessary, that warrants a restraining order. Some things automatically generate one, like most victims' crimes. So typically you see it with like domestic violence calls. Child abuse will automatically generate a restraining order protecting the child from that person who is the suspect of that crime. Assaults, all sorts of things, basically with victims' crimes.
Gotcha.
Excuse me.
What else do you got?
Friends borrowing someone's car and they want to prove that it was stolen.
Verbal contract.
So you
they allowed them at some time to borrow that car.
Civil. There you go.
Easy peasy. I mean, there's some other caveats there. Eventually, it could end up being criminal down the road. But for the most part, if you at one point gave your friend permission to borrow your car, then you made a verbal contractual agreement to mm-hmm. allow them to do it. Obviously, that's not how it's worded. It's like, hey, Erica, can I borrow your car? Yeah, here you go.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, we just entered in a verbal contract for me to use your car. How long? Well, I don't know. Mm-hmm. We didn't specify that. So I might think that means for 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
You might think it means for 2 hours. So we get a lot of calls like that. And unless it was specified or on paper or anything violating that, for the most part, you've made a verbal contract agreement with your friend. Obviously, there's always the potential for caveats to that, to where it could arise to be criminal. But for the most part, you've given me permission to use your car.
Perfect.
And I said indefinitely, so...
Also, a part of that is, I think, evictions. Like, people will be like, oh, I let my son live with me for 2 weeks and now I want him gone.
Yeah, so I think the easy or most times hard and fast way to analyze that, not always, right? Nothing is absolute. But for the most part, with those kind of agreements, is if somebody has lived there long enough and utilizes that as their address for mail.
Mm.
So that's an easy way to show that obviously that's they've taken the time to change or update their mailing address to that location, so they feel like that is now their home.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, they have to be evicted per Colorado's way of doing things.
Interesting.
Now, there's always, like I said, caveats mm-hmm. to things, but for the most part, if you allow that person to stay there and may get mail there, you're going to have them evicted.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times when we go to those kind of calls, people know that.
Mm.
They know that they can't be a victim. Like, I can tell them,
mm-hmm.
or I can ask them, I should say, to leave. And maybe they don't know the law, and they will. But if they know the law, they most of the time when you show up, they say, I get mail here. I know you can't make me leave. And I say, okay. Well, if you wanted to, it's probably a good idea to keep the peace.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I don't. Okay.
Great.
That pretty much ends my involvement at that point.
I see. Okay. Anything else you want to add?
Not really.
No. it's kind of hard because I feel like we can keep going down through all these scenario questions and...
Right. And yeah, what about this?
Civil is, it's not as black and white in my mind. There's a lot more interpretation in gray area.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that because it's not so cut and dry is why we try not to get involved as most as we can. Whether it's because it's not criminal, and that's our main, that's what our job is, criminal enforcement of those violations. But also I think because there's just so many different missing pieces and moving parts to that, that it's just really hard to determine who's at fault and what constitutes a crime at that point.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Thanks for your knowledge.
We try.
Yeah, we all try. Well, that's all we have for you guys. You should check us out on Instagram at How2911Podcast, and then also our YouTube, which is the same name. Our Facebook is Loveland Emergency Communication Center. And then if you have any questions for Erica and I or Officer Marner, you can shoot us an email at how2911podcast@cityofloveland.org. And that's it. I hope you guys have a good day. I've never said that before, so that's weird. But until then, know where you are, know your phone number, and tell us exactly what happened.